Hi, welcome to the Growth.me note on the book Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. Why We Sleep communicates the critical importance of sleep. Modern people don't know that getting less than 7 to 8 hours of sleep daily can cause dozens of serious problems for mental and physical health. Matthew Walker first helps you understand how sleep works and then how to get better sleep. Our top quote from this book is, "Routinely sleeping less than 6 or 7 hours a night demolishes your immune system, more than doubling your risk of cancer." And let's jump right into the top lessons from this book. Lesson 1. Sleep has many great untold benefits for health, happiness, safety, and success. Matthew Walker knows the great benefits sleep offers. He's professor of neuroscience and psychology at the University of California, Berkeley. Before that, he was professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He's been a researcher for over 20 years, focusing mostly on sleep. Sleep is a topic Matthew is very passionate about. Modern people don't seem to value sleep, despite the fact we spend 1/3 of our lives sleeping. In our schools, we are usually taught the importance of healthy eating and exercise. However, we are not taught why it's important to sleep or how to sleep better. 2/3 of people in developed nations fail to sleep at least 8 hours every night, which is the amount medical experts recommend. Many people almost consider it a badge of honor to function on little sleep in the name of higher productivity or success. The results of this modern neglect of sleep are catastrophic. First, lack of sleeping makes driving deadly. If you get less than 5 hours of sleep, then you're 3 times more likely to crash your car. Drowsy driving causes more car accidents than drugs and alcohol combined. Why? Because sleep deprivation causes momentary total gaps in your awareness of the outside world, called microsleeps. Next, your immune system needs sleep to fight off diseases and infections. As the top quote said, when you sleep less than 6 or 7 hours per night, you double your risk of getting cancer. And in one study, people sleeping 5 hours per night were 32% more likely to catch the common cold. Next, sleep problems are a factor in all major mental health conditions like depression, anxiety, and suicide. One of Matthew Walker's studies found that people's brains become far more emotionally reactive when they're underslept, putting the body into a fight-or-flight state of chronic stress. For this reason, another 2011 study found those who sleep too little are 45% more likely to develop or die from heart disease within 25 years. That's 45% more likely to develop or die from heart disease. Next, sleep also helps us regulate our appetite and make healthier food choices. A lack of sleep increases levels of a hormone called ghrelin that makes us feel hungry, while lowering levels of the hormone leptin that makes us feel full. Dr. Eve Van Cowder of the University of Chicago found that study participants who were restricted to 4 to 5 hours of sleep, they ate an average of 300 more calories daily, which translates to 10 to 15 pounds of extra weight gain per year. Next, sleep loss may accelerate diabetes by making our bodies less receptive to insulin. Two research groups discovered that people who sleep less than 6 hours per night have far higher rates of type 2 diabetes. Another study took healthy participants and made them sleep just 4 hours a night for 6 nights. By the end, their ability to absorb glucose was impaired by 40%. And that means most doctors would take one look at the test results and rate those people as pre-diabetic. Now, on the positive side, sleep also helps us to succeed in our career or business. Underslept workers tend to choose easy, low-effort tasks like browsing emails, according to some studies. But people who had enough sleep were more likely to do challenging tasks, the kind that drive careers forward, like designing a complex project or being creative. Back in the 1990s, NASA recognized the importance of sleep and created a nap culture throughout the organization. They found that even short naps that are 26 minutes long increase alertness by 50% and increase performance on a task by 34%. Now, from the point of view of survival and evolution, sleep only makes sense if it is absolutely essential to life. Think about it. There is little that makes an animal more helpless than needing to slip into a coma for hours every night. Yet, all animals sleep, from insects to fish to frogs and birds and mice and tigers, bears, chimps, and humans. In fact, dolphins, who need to continue swimming while they sleep, can sleep with only half their brain at a time. So a summary of this first lesson. Matthew Walker is a professor and researcher at UC Berkeley. He's been studying sleep for over 20 years, and he wants to help modern people value sleep again. Lack of sleep destroys the immune system, causes mental health issues, and makes driving far more dangerous. Lesson 2. Two-thirds of people don't sleep enough. Do you? So, are you getting enough sleep? As mentioned before, 2 out of 3 people in the U.S. fail to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep each night that medical experts recommend. Matthew offers these 2 simple questions you can ask yourself. Quote, first, after waking up in the morning, could you fall back asleep at 10 or 11 a.m.? If the answer is yes, you're likely not getting sufficient sleep quantity and or quality. Second, can you function optimally without caffeine before noon? If the answer is no, then you're most likely self-medicating your state of chronic sleep deprivation. End quote. People often try to catch up on sleep during the weekend, especially when they have a habit of sleeping too little during the week. But as you'll see, missing sleep is not like a credit card debt that you can simply pay back later. There are real consequences to sleep deprivation, especially when it comes to learning and memory. Now, most cultures that have not been touched by technology sleep in a biphasic pattern. This means they sleep for 7 to 8 hours, and they also have a 30 to 60 minute nap each afternoon. This pattern has often been observed in hunter-gatherer tribes in Africa. Biphasic sleep like this is also popular in many Mediterranean countries like Spain, Italy, and Greece. These countries have a siesta culture of taking an afternoon nap during the hottest part of the day. And a study of 30,000 Greeks found that people who took these afternoon naps were significantly less likely to die of a heart attack. Unfortunately, this practice is now far less popular among younger working people than the older generation. In contrast, most people in developed countries sleep in one long stretch at night, which scientists call a monophasic sleep pattern. To most of us, this is the normal way to sleep, but it is probably not the healthiest way. Summary of this lesson. You are not getting enough sleep if you can fall asleep again in a couple hours after waking up, or if you can't function well before noon without coffee. People in cultures that don't yet have technology often take a 30 to 60 minute nap in the afternoon, and this has good health benefits. Lesson 3. Why do we feel sleepy or alert at different times? Plus some caffeine tips. So, you will sleep better when you understand the inner workings of sleep. Many modern people suffer from a type of environmentally induced insomnia because we don't realize the effect things like caffeine, lights, and temperature have on our sleep. So, the first part of our sleep-wake system is an inner clock. We all have an inner clock. That is biological. This clock is located in a very deep and small part of our brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. The human inner clock repeats a sleep-wake rhythm of about one day. Humans follow this rhythm even when We are totally cut off from sunlight. This is called our circadian rhythm, the word circadian meaning about a day. This rhythm is actually about 26 hours long, a little longer than a day. Why is it longer? Well, scientists aren't sure, but they guess that sunlight information that our brains receive helps us to fine-tune this imprecise internal rhythm. So how did scientists discover this inner clock and measure it to be 26 hours? Well, in 1938, a University of Chicago professor named Kleitman and his research assistant Richardson did a radical experiment. They went into one of the deepest, darkest caves in the US and they stayed there for 32 days in complete darkness. They took many scientific medical instruments along, with weeks' worth of food, beds, and so on. They also brought buckets of water to submerge their bed legs into so that no creepy crawly things could join them in bed. This inner clock is the part of our brain responsible for jet lag. Jet lag is the experience many people get when they travel across many time zones in a plane. They arrive in a new location and they can't sleep at night easily and they feel very sleepy during the day. And that's because their inner clock is still more in tune with the time zone they left from. So how long does it take for this jet lag to go away? Matthew Walker has an answer. Quote, "For every day you are in a different time zone, your suprachiasmatic nucleus can only readjust by about 1 hour." End quote. The second part of our sleep-wake system is a chemical called adenosine. Adenosine builds up a sleep pressure inside of us the longer we stay awake. So after about 12 to 16 hours of being awake, most people will get a very strong urge to go to sleep, which is caused by rising levels of adenosine in your brain. Caffeine actually works by blocking this adenosine chemical. Caffeine works by latching onto the same receptors in your brain as adenosine. It outraces adenosine to these receptor sites so that your brain cannot receive the message of tiredness. As a result, caffeine helps us avoid feeling drowsy for a while at least. Now, many people do suffer a caffeine crash a few hours after drinking coffee because of adenosine. See, once the caffeine you drank has been fully decomposed by your liver, your adenosine levels have meanwhile really built up during that time. So after that caffeine has been fully processed by your body, suddenly your brain is now hit with a huge wave of adenosine, which makes people suddenly feel really tired. When you drink caffeine, 5 to 7 hours later, half that caffeine is still in your system. And that's why you should generally avoid drinking coffee too late in the afternoon. Most people underestimate how long it takes our bodies to flush out caffeine, and this can lead to major sleep problems. Summary of this lesson: you have an inner clock that makes you feel sleepy or awake in a circadian rhythm that repeats every day, even without sunlight exposure. You also have a chemical called adenosine that builds up a sleep pressure the longer you're awake. Caffeine works by blocking adenosine from making you feel tired, but taking caffeine even several hours before bed can later make sleep difficult. Lesson 4. Chronotypes explained. Are you a morning or evening type? Now, everyone has that inner clock, but the start and stop times of people's inner clock vary widely. This means you can be roughly categorized as a morning type, evening type, or somewhere in between. Scientists call this your chronotype. So if you understand what your natural chronotype is, then you'll be able to maximize your daily alertness and your work productivity. About 40% of people are morning types. They naturally like waking up very early and feel sleepy early at nighttime. That's the way their inner clock is wired, and our society is often set up for these morning types, with people often needing to wake up early for work or school. Another 30% of people are evening types. Their inner clock gives them a natural tendency to stay up late and therefore wake up later the next morning. Their brain also doesn't wake up quickly in the early morning. They need some time to become fully alert and functional. And the final 30% of people fall somewhere between the morning and evening types. Our society is often built around morning types. Unfortunately, if you are an evening type, you may struggle to follow the schedules that are now common in society, like waking up at 7 or 8 a.m. to commute to a 9-to-5 job. So, evening types are often labeled as lazy, even though they are just following their built-in natural rhythm. A person's inner clock changes a lot through growing up. For example, newborn babies wake up and fall asleep many times throughout a day, but as babies grow up, they begin to develop a stronger 24-hour rhythm, and by the age of 4, this rhythm is mostly established, and kids mostly sleep in one long nighttime block with maybe one daytime nap. Kids in general have an earlier inner clock, going to sleep and waking up earlier than adults. Now, teenagers universally stay up later and then have trouble getting up early. That's because during adolescence, the inner clock shifts later. Teens don't stay up to be rebellious, at least not always, but because their circadian rhythm makes them not feel sleepy at 10 p.m. It's like asking an adult to go to sleep at 7 p.m. And this, of course, presents a conflict with early school start times in many countries. Matthew Walker says that schools should shift to later start times and later end times. In one test case in Edina, Minnesota, a school went from starting at 7:25 to 8:30 a.m., and SAT scores for the top-performing chunk of students increased by about 150 points. As a side effect, this would shorten the time after school when adolescents could get mixed up in mischief or crime before parents arrive from work. Professor Walker also says that flexible work shifts could ensure that all types of people can be maximally productive at work. Employers should allow workers to choose more flexible hours instead of one rigid start and stop time for everybody. For example, morning types could show up even earlier at 6 a.m. and go home earlier, while evening types can sleep in and come into work later and then also finish work later in the afternoon. And then everyone only needs to be present at the same time in the office for a core window of time, like noon to 3 p.m. And I think that's a great idea. Summary of this lesson, 40% of people are morning types, 30% are evening types, and the rest are somewhere in between. This means our biological inner clock naturally makes us drowsy and awake at different times than other people. Unfortunately, right now society is often built around morning types, and evening types are judged as lazy. Lesson 5. We cycle into REM sleep every 90 minutes, and this is when we dream. During sleep, every 90 minutes, humans cycle between two very different sleep stages, REM and non-REM sleep. It was sleep research pioneer Eugene Ossorinsky who was the first to discover REM sleep in 1953. Interestingly, he did it by studying his son, hooking his son up to an old EEG machine in his university, which measures electrical activity in the brain. So he studied these EEG readings while he stayed awake in the next room with pretzels and coffee. REM sleep offers different benefits for our brains than NREM sleep. This is why we need all stages of nightly sleep for our brains to function effectively. REM sleep stands for rapid eye movement. That's because during REM sleep, people's eyes move very quickly and jerkily under their eyelids. If you observe someone carefully, you can actually see when someone is in REM sleep by eyelid movements. Brain activity during REM sleep looks almost identical to brain activity while awake, and it is very different from the slow, deep brainwaves of non-REM sleep. This is because vivid dreaming takes place only during REM sleep, so the parts of our brains related to our senses, vision, emotion, and memory are very active during REM sleep. However, a part of the brain called the prefrontal cortex is mostly deactivated during REM sleep. The prefrontal cortex specifically controls your rational, logical, and orderly thinking in your mind. And considering how irrational and nonsensical our dreams can often be, this makes sense. All the voluntary muscles in your body are also paralyzed just before dreaming. That's probably so you don't start dangerously swinging your arms or legs around in bed. If you're interested more in how different parts of your brain work and how they control your behavior, I highly recommend you check out our note on Stanford Professor Robert Sapolsky's book, Behave. That's the book Behave by Robert Sapolsky. Now, a fetus in utero spends about half its time in REM sleep. And even when a baby is 6 months old, this ratio remains about the same. REM sleep is always greatest during the early stages of life when the brain is being built. It is only when a child is several years old that REM sleep decreases to about 30% of total sleep time. As adults, we spend about 20 to 25% of our sleep time dedicated to REM sleep, which is still a lot more than other animals. For example, other primates spend only 8% of their time in REM sleep. Interestingly, autistic children have 30 to 50% less REM sleep than other children. Does that mean that too little REM sleep causes autism, or vice versa? Well, scientists don't know yet. However, experiments on sleep-deprived infant rats did show that a lack of REM sleep led to unusual neural connections, and it made those rats become more socially withdrawn and isolated later in life. Unexpectedly, REM sleep is also not spread evenly throughout the nighttime. We get more of our REM sleep during the last half of the night. That means if you habitually wake up underslept, with 6 hours of sleep, for example, then you will miss out on a big chunk of your nightly REM sleep and the unique benefits it provides. If you want good REM sleep, then avoid alcohol. Even moderate amounts of alcohol severely lower how much REM sleep we get. And that's because when alcohol is processed by the body, chemicals called aldehydes are released, which are a very powerful REM sleep suppressor. Alcohol doesn't help us achieve natural sleep. It is a sedative, which means while it sedates certain parts of brain activity, including impulse control, but alcohol causes fragmented sleep with many small awakenings in the night, which blocks us from a truly restorative night of sleep. In one study of college students learning new grammar, alcohol caused about 40 to 50% more memory loss of the new learning. So in this study of college students, one group drank 2 to 3 shots of vodka mixed with orange juice the day after they learned something new, and they had 50% more memory loss 7 days later compared to a control group who didn't drink. Even more surprisingly, there was another group who only drank 3 days after the initial learning, but they also suffered about 40% memory loss. Summary of this lesson: REM stands for rapid eye movement, which is what happens during REM sleep. REM sleep brainwaves are very similar to our waking state, but the logical parts of our mind and muscles are deactivated. Even moderate alcohol intake dramatically inhibits REM sleep. Lesson 6. REM Dream Sleep provides benefits for emotional therapy and creativity. Our dreams often contain our daytime emotional concerns. It was Sigmund Freud who came up with the idea of day residue, which means that he believed dreams were a replay of our day's events. And it turns out that Freud's idea of day residue is partially true. A recent study by Robert Stickgold at Harvard asked 29 participants to keep a detailed log of their daily activities and their nightly dreams. While people's dreams almost never seem to replay exactly what happened during the daytime, their dreams did often contain what they were emotionally concerned with during the day, 35 to 55% of the time. So our dreams do often contain our daytime emotional concerns. REM sleep dreaming provides a type of overnight therapy. Only during REM sleep, a stress chemical called noradrenaline is deactivated in our brains. And this means that while dreaming, we are able to recall distressing or traumatic memories while remaining emotionally calm. This paradoxical state lets us process those frightening experiences and dissolve the painful emotional charge wrapped around past traumas. As a result, we can recall what happened and learn from it without becoming emotionally crippled each time by the memory. In one study, after an overnight sleep, people reacted much less to emotional images that they'd seen before. And this was proven by one of Matthew Walker's studies. First, he showed a set of emotional images to people while they're in an MRI scanner and observed their brain activity. And then, 12 hours later, he showed the same images again. However, this time half of his participants had slept overnight and the other half did not sleep yet. What Matthew Walker discovered was very important. He found the people who had slept now had much less reactivity in their amygdala, which is a part of the brain that triggers strong emotions like fear. However, the people who had not slept were just as emotionally reactive as the first time they'd seen the images. Even more importantly, Matthew Walker found those participants who had gotten good REM sleep had the biggest overnight improvements. To provide emotional resolution, your dreams must be about the distressing or traumatic experience that you've had. Another Chicago researcher, Dr. Rosalind Cartwright, was studying her clinically depressed patients. She had them keep a detailed log of their dream contents, and what she found was the patients who dreamed about their difficult life situation, like a terrible breakup or divorce, they were the ones who came out of depression 1 year later. However, she found that just having dreams in general did not provide an improvement in depression. Dreaming also inspires creativity because during REM sleep, our brains form more distant and non-obvious connections. During REM sleep, our brains make connections differently, forming links between very distant memories and information and blending it together in new ways. That's probably why dreams can often be so bizarre. Many famous artists and inventors have credited dreams for some of their creativity. For example, Paul McCartney of the Beatles said some of his best loved songs, such as Yesterday and Let It Be, came to him during dreams. And Thomas Edison would often sit down for daytime naps in an armchair while he's holding onto three metal bowls in his hand. And then, just as he was falling asleep, the bowls would crash out of his hand to the floor, waking him up again. And then, in that state of just coming out of sleep, Edison would write down all of the new ideas that were floating through his mind. People are more open-minded problem solvers just after REM sleep, studies have found. Professors Walker and Stickgold at Harvard devised an experiment where they woke participants up in their lab four times in a night, twice during REM sleep and twice during non-REM sleep. After waking the person up, they immediately gave them 90 seconds to solve anagram puzzles, and surprisingly, they found that just after REM sleep, participants were 15 to 35% better at solving the word puzzles than after NREM sleep or even while awake. That is a big improvement. They concluded that REM sleep gives people a more open-minded state of free mental association, but this quickly evaporates in the minutes after waking up. Summary of this lesson: only during REM sleep, a stress chemical named noradrenaline is deactivated in our brains. This allows us to process frightening, stressful, or traumatic experiences better. During REM sleep, our brains are also able to form more distant and non-obvious connections. And this is why dreams can be so bizarre, yet often also inspire creativity. Lesson 7. NREM sleep, non-REM sleep, is essential for learning and establishing long-term memories. During non-REM sleep, our brainwaves become slower and more synchronized. In this stage of sleep, our brainwaves are almost like a stadium of people who are chanting together. The brainwaves travel deeply throughout our brain, connecting distant regions, and this is a big difference from REM sleep, or the waking state, and during REM sleep, our brain cells fire more individually with a fast frequency, so it's almost like a stadium of people who are chattering chaotically. Non-REM sleep moves our daily memories from the short-term to long-term storage in our brains. During non-REM sleep, researchers can actually see a pulse of electrical current moving between the hippocampus to the cortex every 100 to 200 milliseconds. A good analogy is it's like moving your digital photos from a short-term memory card to your computer's long-term hard drive. MRI scans also confirm that our memories are retrieved from different locations before and after sleep. Before sleep, our recent memories are retrieved from our hippocampus, which is a fragile short-term place of storage with limited capacity. But after sleeping, the same memories are retrieved from our cortex, which is a more stable and permanent home. Sleep also helps us learn new motor skills faster. New learning is not just about memorizing facts, but it's also about what people call muscle memory. For example, when you're learning to ride a bike, drive a car, or play a musical instrument. These are things you cannot learn from a book, but through practice. And studies have found the brain continues to learn these new motor skills and to put them into muscle memory while we sleep, not just while we practice. In one of Matthew Walker's studies, he taught two groups of people to type sequences of numbers as quickly and accurately as possible into a computer. This was a simple test of motor learning. So for example, people would have to type a number sequence like 41324 into computers as quickly as they could. So he taught two groups of people to type these number sequences, and one group was taught in the morning, and then they were tested again 12 hours later in the evening, but a second group was taught these number sequences in the evening time, then they were tested again 12 hours later in the morning after they had had 8 hours of sleep. And the results were clear. The group who had been able to sleep, they improved their ability to type the number sequences far more than the other group, with a 20% speed improvement and 35% accuracy improvement. Non-REM sleep prepares our brain for fresh learning. In one study, two groups of people did a memory exercise, memorizing 100 pairs of faces and names. And then they were allowed to sleep 90 minutes while another group did that same exercise, but they had to stay awake. And then those two groups did the same exercise again, memorizing another 100 pairs of faces and names. And the study found that those who were able to take the 90-minute nap did a lot better learning than the second group, being able to memorize 20% more as the day progressed. Here's a quote from the book. "Even daytime naps as short as 20 minutes can offer a memory consolidation advantage so long as they contain enough non-REM sleep." End quote. Sleep spindles appear especially important for overnight restoration of learning capacity. What are sleep spindles? They are short, powerful bursts of neural activity that happen during the stage 2 of non-REM sleep. When researchers analyzed brainwave sleep activity during the previously mentioned study, they found that the more sleep spindles that someone had during sleep, the better they could learn the next day. Now, older people, 68 to 80 years old, they have 40% less of these sleep spindles, which may explain why new learning appears to come easier for younger people. And the last 2 hours of nightly sleep are the most important for consolidating memories. Why? Because that's when we get the most stage 2 REM sleep and sleep spindles. This is important because if you cut your sleep short in the morning, then you will lose a disproportionate amount of this sleep that is very beneficial to memory. In fact, Professor Walker was so concerned about his university students getting too much sleep deprivation and pulling overnighters that he split his own courses into 3 parts, and he no longer has a single large stressful exam at the end. Summary of this lesson. During non-REM sleep, our memories are moved from the short-term storage in our hippocampus to our long-term storage in our cortex. Our brains continue to reinforce new memories, including facts and motor skills, even while we're sleeping. We need 8 hours of nightly sleep for this learning capacity to be fully restored the next day. Now, lesson 8. Environmental adjustments, not sleeping pills, are among the most effective treatments for insomnia. 28 to 45% of clinical insomnia may be determined by genetics. But that also means the majority of insomnia is not caused by genetics, but people's environment or surroundings. There are also many people who do not really have clinical insomnia, but they have other sleep problems that are caused by a lack of education about how their environment or their habits can negatively affect sleep, for example, by drinking coffee too late. 10 million people in the U.S. take a sleep medication monthly, but studies have found the benefits of these medications are small and questionable. On the other hand, the downsides and side effects of sleeping pills can be large. Among other side effects, Ambien seems to cause many memory problems, even weakening and erasing existing memories. Plus, sleeping pills are sedatives, like alcohol. This means they work by knocking out the frontal cortex functioning of your brain, and that means they don't provide a natural sleep. Brainwaves of people taking sleep medications like Ambien or Lunesta were measured to be smaller and shallower than regular deep sleep brainwaves. The American Medical Association now recommends a treatment called CBTI as the first line of treatment for insomnia, not sleeping pills. What is CBTI? It stands for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Insomnia. And this kind of therapy is generally done with a trained therapist over several weeks who helps someone to eliminate their bad sleep habits and lowers their anxieties that may be stopping them from sleeping. You see, the most common reasons for chronic insomnia are actually psychological, like worry and anxiety. You see, when your fight or flight system is triggered, then it can be very difficult to begin sleeping. Sleep hygiene means first making changes to your sleep environment and habits. And this is actually the foundation that CBTI is based upon. And the good news is, anyone can begin following some basic rules to set up a better sleep environment for yourself. You've already heard some of the guidelines in this note, like not drinking coffee too late and avoiding alcohol. Here are four more top sleep recommendations proven by science. Number one recommendation. Avoid artificial light in the evening, especially blue LED lights. Artificial lights suppress melatonin, which is a hormone triggered by darkness that helps our brain know when to start sleeping. So if you're surrounded by lights at night, then the melatonin levels do not rise appropriately. One study found even reading on an iPad versus a printed book at nighttime suppressed melatonin levels by 50% and delayed the natural onset of sleep by many hours. Recommendation 2. Decrease your body's core temperature to initiate sleep more easily. To fall asleep, your inner temperature of your body must fall by 1 degree Celsius or about 2 to 3 degrees Fahrenheit. And this is probably related to nighttime being naturally colder than daytime. So make sure to keep your room on the cool side rather than the warm side. A warm bath can also help people go to sleep because after you get out of the bath, your blood vessels dilate and then your body temperature actually decreases a lot in the minutes after you get out of the bath. Recommendation 3. Go to bed and wake up at the same time each night. This is Matthew Walker's number one sleep improvement recommendation. And keep this bedtime constant even on weekends. Recommendation 4. Don't lie awake in bed for more than 20 minutes. So if you can't begin sleeping, then go do something else relaxing for a while and then return to bed and try to sleep again. Doing something relaxing before bed also helps to soothe mental anxiety, which decreases heart rate, which in turn decreases body temperature. This tip helps many people struggling with insomnia. Don't just keep lying awake in bed. After 20 minutes, get up, go do something else, and only return later on. Summary of this last lesson. 10 million people in the U.S. take sleeping pills each month, but studies say the benefits are small and side effects could be large. The recommended treatment for insomnia is now CBTI, which combines changing your sleeping environment and stopping bad sleeping habits, plus lowering your anxieties. Simple, effective changes you can do to help your sleep include eliminating artificial light in the evening, lowering your body temperature, going to sleep and waking up at the same time each night. Okay, that's the end of our note for this book, Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker, and I'll see you in another book note.